heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
Really today, I want to talk about what I believe is the two biggest issues of the 2020 election. And I believe if Americans understand these two issues and they're out in the light of day, it will absolutely ensure what the result is going to be of this election once people understand these two single issues. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to divide this conversation up now with both of those issues. Last couple of days here, Gallup has a survey out, and let's look at a couple of these things here. And they say, as the nation remains in a pandemic-induced recession, U.S. voters say the economy is the most important issue of 16 that may potentially affect their choice for president. Now, you know, with all the issues, the economy is always a driving force. That's not unusual at all. It's always like the top button. If you have a good economy, an incumbent president is always going to get another term. That has typically been the case. That's why I always reference last November, you know, pre-COVID, when the economy was skyrocketing. Obviously, the left was very nervous because they didn't have anything else to go after the president with. He was being very successful economically. If that's your driving force, then he was your candidate. And clearly, that's typically the driving force in an election. It holds true pretty often. But there are other conditions that I think we really need to consider that would really make the economy not the top item. I'll explain more about what I'm talking about here, because there are some things, some real issues here that could change everything and make these issues totally dwarfed. Like, do they really even matter at that point, you know? That's hard to say, I know, or hard to understand more so, you know. So Gallup says nearly 9 in 10 registered voters consider the presidential candidate's positions on the economy extremely, 44%, they're saying, or very, 45% important to their vote. So there you go. That's the 9 in 10 registered voters at the economy. It's a driving force. The economy usually is high on the list because it impacts one's personal life and it tells you the story of whether you're going to be able to move ahead in life or not. And let's face it, how politicians act and with these tax cuts and things that the president had enacted, that was a big source of pride for the conservative movement, but it really brought money into middle-income families. And that really is, again, a driving force of any election, let's face it, right? So Gallup says at least 3/4 of voters consider 6 other issues to be important to their vote choice. And here they are, terrorism and national security, 83%. Now that in itself, that always rises when there's a national problem or some sort of a terrorism event or some other sort of else that compromises national security, that will always drive up. Kind of surprised that's that high right now when we haven't really had some big event or something in recent weeks or months, right? Of course, we do have the civil unrest and what's happened in the cities. That could be a driving mechanism to that as well. But anyways, that's 83%, okay? Education is next, 82%. Healthcare is 80%. Crime, well, there you go, 79%, right? Now, the response to the coronavirus is 77%, and race relations is 76%. These are the latest numbers from Gallup when surveying to say, okay, these are the issues that Americans are most concerned with. They are those table-side issues that they'll vote on. These are the ones that will drive them to vote and where you'll win their vote, you know. They go on to say, Gallup, a majority of voters say 8 of the 10 remaining issues are extremely or very important. And you listen to this now. Foreign affairs, 74%, sure. Gun policy, the Second Amendment, 68%. Immigration, 65%. The federal budget deficit, 65%. Relations with China, that's a big one, 64%. Abortion, 61%. And of course, that is elevated with this election with the Supreme Court, with the death of Ginsburg now, and the potential nomination of Justice Amy Coney Barrett, if that follows through, right? And taxes, 61%, and climate change, 55%. The only other issue, by the way, that was viewed as that was less important was relations with Russia. It's funny how that's not even on the radar screen, but that was really the poster child for the left to use the Russia, Russia, Russia. By golly, we've heard enough about that in the last 4 years, haven't we now? You know, well, that's not even on the radar screen with Americans. They're not concerned with Russia, but they certainly are concerned with China. That's good. That's wise for people to be understanding where the stakes are with China, because we have a lot of work to do there, a lot of damage control. So those are the normal issues that people are going to vote for. It makes sense with the economy being top. But a lot of these other issues right now, I want to suggest to you, when we talk about the immigration and we talk about healthcare and education, which are still vitally important here, and national security, I just pointed out to you. But, you know, really, truth be told, you don't hear a lot about that right now. I don't sense those as being driving issues, even though Gallup is saying they are. You're not seeing a lot in the news cycle about those issues. Probably the COVID, which was 77% of those numbers, has really sucked up a lot of oxygen in the room, you see. So that's really taken a lot of... Now, when I say that, let's drill down a little bit more. You know, you have terrorism, national security in front of that, education, healthcare, crime, law and order. Those are all in front of the coronavirus and surely the economy. Yeah, I mean, that's number one. So you think about it there, and yet coronavirus is down here, but yet all the media incessantly talks about is the virus. That's all we keep hearing all the time with the headlines, is there's umpteen more cases, and you know, the sky has fallen sort of narrative is what they've been pushing now since early in the year. And they've got everybody living their life, or a lot of people, with the fear factor is what I would say. And that's a real problem. That's a real problem we're seeing as, you know, we drive more and more toward this election, that people are so fearful. I think it's a sad state of affairs in our nation. But really right here, this tells me that the media is driving one narrative, and all these issues that are still even more important than COVID to the American people, which as far as I'm concerned, is a good sign, because they realize COVID will be at some point in the rearview mirror, God willing, right? But, and then that won't be the problem. But you see, so what is really most concerning to Americans, they're not even talking about, is my point. And These are not the issues that are being discussed. And again, the COVID is really, it's sucking up a lot of that oxygen in the room. And therefore, we're really not giving the American people back what they want to hear, is what I suggest to you. And that, again, is a problem with our media, as I consistently say to you. And it's what we got here. And so it's important to point this out so you understand that there are, the American people understand there are far more issues than COVID. That's a good thing, I believe. But the economy being a driving force. But I'm going to blow all that out of the water now. There are two issues I'm going to suggest to you today that kill all of that. It makes the economy non-consequential, and makes education, healthcare, the virus, race relations, to me, all non-consequential. And they are two major issues. And I suggest to you, you need to vote accordingly based on these two issues. No fooling here. I mean, this is God's honest truth. The first one is you keep hearing packing the court. That's one of the issues we want to talk about, packing the court. Now, I'm not sure a lot of Americans even know or understand what that really means. So I want to explain it today to everybody so you understand it and you can tell other people what it really means. I mean, certainly a lot of you do know that it means they want to pack the court with more justices. But let's talk about why and why this is so consequential. So right now it's being used as a talking point and the media's all over this, and Biden and Harris, of course, are running from it. Let's look at some evidence now. In 2019, the New York Times had asked at that point, Senator Kamala Harris, the Democrat out of California again, are you open to expanding the size of the Supreme Court? Now, Kamala Harris responded, I'm absolutely open to it. Those are her words. That same year, she told Politico, and I quote, we are on the verge of a crisis of confidence in the Supreme Court. We have to take this challenge head on, and everything is on the table to do that. Now, many people took that again as packing the court, because what else would it be that she was saying? So she clearly has left herself wide open, and she said she's absolutely open to it. Those are her words. That's not a mixed signal. I mean, that's straight out. Okay, so we know what her position is. She's made that clear. Now, remember, a lot of these politicians, they're all over the ballpark. They say one thing, whatever way the political winds are blowing, they put their finger up in the air, and whatever way the political winds are blowing, that's their passion. Right away, and the political wind's taken, and they blow it over this way, that's their passion. And they blow another direction over here, and then they'll quickly change, and that's their passion. And that is the problem, isn't it now? They're all over the place. And we're seeing that right now with Biden and Harris, which is why they're kind of being caught flat-footed in a lot of these debates and conversations. Well, but you said such and such, or you meant such and such, and a lot of their previous statements are being turned on them. And, you know, all they are playing at that point is defense. And they continue to deny what has obviously been said or out there already. Now, clearly, they can change their mind, but at least admit that you've changed your mind and be honest with the American people. I mean, that's not asking a lot, is it? I mean, it's okay. I mean, I know a lot of people get upset. Well, oh, my God, but you thought that way. I mean, there was a time when President Trump thought a certain way. At some point, he was a Democrat. And it's hard to believe that, because he has fit into the role of one of the most conservative presidents in the history of our nation, I would suggest to you. You look at his agenda, and I'm not just going to say in our lifetime, probably in the history of our nation. You can argue that with me, but I think it's a fact, which is amazing, because a lot of people didn't think he was going to deliver what he promised, and yet he continues to deliver on his promises, his campaign promises, which is in itself an anomaly. It doesn't exist in political circles very much. It's why a lot of conservatives called him out. It's why a lot of conservatives didn't believe him at all. A lot of the pundits and a lot of the people when he ran in 2015 and 2016, they thought he was full of it. You're just doing this because you want to get in. You're running as a Republican, but you're not really that. Well, boy, did he fool them all wrong, didn't he? I mean, really, he's become one of the most consequential presidents, certainly of our lifetime, very much so. But he also, in the history of our nation, I would suggest to you, and I'll put it out there, probably one of the most conservative presidents in the history of our nation. And I'm just talking about his record and looking the way he governs. Now, the only thing that would really cement that, if he could turn our deficit and bring it back to some semblance of order, which is really what all conservatives would love, and is to see him do that and to work on the debt. But you got to have the right conditions, and you got to have the right people to work with. And America doesn't always give the president all the tools. Typically, they'll put a president in there and then counterbalance things and not give him the Senate and the House, or certainly not give him at least one of those branches, as we see now. I mean, sometimes it all lines up, and then a president can, that's a mandate to really do what has got to be done, depending what you've elected into office and what you want done. How far to the left or how far to the right, you know, where the policies really are for America, I guess, right? That's what I would say. Now, packing the court, back to that. So Joe Biden, now, in all fairness here, he typically has been against this, and he has spoken out before about it. But now you're seeing him being caught in the crosshairs of what the Democrat Party has become. And this is a major issue in this election here, I'm telling you right now. We have been talking and reporting for quite some time now about the transition of the Democrat Party. And, you know, it's kind of become, in some circles, a bit of a joke, but it's not a joke. I mean, this party has changed dramatically. You've heard me on air talk about it with a lot of people. You heard me just the other day talk about it with Dinesh D'Souza again. You've heard me talk about it with Michael Johns. You've heard me talk about it with leading political figures, right? But it is a fact. Biden has now, he's coming out, and he was just cornered the other day here again. And you're seeing them in the debates when they're asked, both Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, when they're put on the spot and said, you know, packing the court, they duck it. They deny and they duck and they, well, we're not going to answer that. Or they avoid it and they do the usual political shuffle and they don't ever answer that question. But now they've done it so much now, it's become a major election issue. And everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. But there's a reason why this is happening, okay? So Biden is cornered and he comes out and says this. He says, it's a legitimate question, you think? Well, let me tell you why I'm not going to answer that question. Because it will shift all the focus. Really and truly, honestly, this has got to be the most stupid answer I've ever seen to a political question before in my life. I mean, it is insane. It's insanity how he answers that question. I mean, you don't answer a question by saying the way he answers it is he qualifies it's a legitimate question. Okay, Mr. Vice President, yeah. And presidential candidate Biden, right? But let me tell you why I'm not going to answer it, because it'll be the headlines everywhere. So, I mean, that was a moronic thing to say, because just by not answering is saying what you said you made at the headline everywhere. I mean, just by not. Now, the only where it's not going to be a headline is a lot of the mainstream media who don't report on anything they don't want to report on that doesn't fit the agenda of the far left. But you already know that. That's kind of baked into the whole political cake at this point, isn't it? As sick as it is. They don't report on any of the stuff I'm going to talk to you about today. But really, just by not answering to that, you're feeding the whole frenzy of what you're going to do. And to say that, it will shift all the focus because you don't want it to. So what are you saying? You're saying that it's a legitimate issue and you are going to pack the courts, which many people believe will happen. Or what? Or the fact that you really just don't want to talk about it because you don't want to let your hand go. You don't want to go let your poker hand go, which you already did. And somehow you think it's not going to shift the focus. But if you say that, it's going to shift the focus. It doesn't make any sense to me. It is outright weird that he would answer it back in that way. I'm not sure what he's accomplishing or what he thinks he's accomplishing. I don't know. He goes on to say, by the way, he says here, when the election is over, he says, you'll know my position after the election. You don't get to do that as a presidential candidate. You don't get to do that. You just don't get to do that. I mean, everybody has got to strike back against anybody, Biden, Trump, anybody who did. You don't get to do that. That's you don't get a pass. You're not able to pass go on this one, fella. I don't care who you are or who you think you are. All the media, everybody needs to hold them accountable now to answer this question. You don't get to do that. I'm not going to tell you anything, but I want your vote. I mean, come on. All of America has to stand up and say to this guy, there's no way. There's no way. I mean, the only reason you would even vote for him at this point, based on what I just told you, is if you really, truly hated Donald Trump. And there's a lot of people who fall into that category, clearly, people. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, right? But there are a lot of people who they would probably vote for Adolf Hitler over Donald Trump at this point, or if he was here and running on the ticket here in the U.S. But, I mean, they'd vote about on anybody. If Xi Jinping was on the ticket here, or Vladimir Putin, I mean, that's the level they hate Donald Trump at. You have to almost know, under no condition, it doesn't appear that they would give their vote to Trump. I don't know. It's kind of weird just saying it that way, but it seems to be the way it's fallen, though. It sounds a little extreme, maybe, or I'm making a valid point or a crazy point, a point that maybe doesn't make a lot of sense. It's hard to fathom that the hate goes that deep, but somehow it seems to. It surely seems to. When you look at these two issues right now and you see the way a lot of people are still thinking, and a lot of conservatives too. A lot of people fall into, you know, the former governor from Ohio, you know who he is, and people like the former communications guy for just a few weeks, as I recall, Scarmucci, right? And all those kind of people. Yeah, even Romney, he's probably voting for Biden as well. People who are conservatives or say they are, but they're really not. And we could argue that all day too, but why bother, right? So listen, almost immediately after Ginsburg's passing there, you had everybody coming out about once the Republicans showed that their hand, that they were going to move forward on a Supreme Court justice nomination, and that the president was going to do that. The speculation was maybe about 10 minutes before that was settled real quick, and everybody knew exactly what was going to happen. But they always say, if the shoe was on the other foot and the Democrats controlled the presidency and the Senate, would they do it? I'll let you answer that one for yourself, okay? All right, fair enough. No need to answer that one. And so right after Ginsburg's passing, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, he comes out about the court pack and he says everything is on the table, okay? Then you have leaders like House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, you got Congresswoman Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez and all the others in there. They're also calling for court packing. They said if they have the power to do it, they should do it. And we'll talk about why that's a real problem, but so let's talk about why, and let's talk about Supreme Court a little bit more here. You see, there's a lot in jeopardy now because we're now being called to test. We're testing going back over the last 20 years of the way our presidents have governed and the way a lot of them have been legislating from the bench. And a lot of this that was unconstitutional now is coming into the light of day. And that's why people are nervous, because the court is really being challenged right now, the Supreme Court. And this is a tipping point in our nation right this very moment. That's what makes this such a vital issue. So issues like Obamacare, I mean, that's front and center right now, the health care. Now, people always knew that most of that law was unconstitutional. That was the law that Pelosi voted through the middle of the night and said, we'll have to see what's in it on the other side of the vote. Pretty much insanity the way they got that one in there. But, you know, whether you believe it in it or not, or there's another health care solution for our nation, and there's a lot of arguments about that, I get it. Absolutely. Healthcare is expensive for everybody. I mean, you know, liberal or conservative, healthcare is damn expensive for all of us. And we don't like it. But, you know, that gets into the whole bureaucracy of healthcare. And, you know, that gets into a whole lot of other things like, opening up state lines to be able to get the best healthcare deals and a tort reform in healthcare because it's so burdensome with the lawsuits and really all of that. I mean, there's a whole lot of reasons why healthcare and just the pure basic growth of bureaucracy in healthcare has made it, you know, really so unaffordable to get sick today. It costs you a hell of a lot to get sick today. So healthcare, it's a major issue. And we do need some answers for healthcare, no question. But listen, Obamacare was always unconstitutional. Everybody knew it. The left knew it. The right knew it. The center knew it. They all knew it. But we know how they got it in there. and how it happened and the way they forced hands. And a lot of those people at the end who voted for it are no longer in government. They were pushed out, by the way. So there's always damage control with these sorts of events when you do these kinds of things. But you have Obamacare. You've got, again, a lot of environmental regulations. Many of those are being questioned as unconstitutional. A lot of these regulations, but the environmental ones, those are really questioning. And then, of course, you've got the Second Amendment. But more so than that, you've got what we're arguing about right now, which is Roe versus Wade and the constitutionality of that. All these issues come back to what is the role of the Supreme Court and what do we expect from the Supreme Court, right? Well, first of all, let's understand that they're lifetime appointments. And I've talked to you about the danger in lifetime appointments when people get into their high 80s and 90s, being in these positions of power, the levers of power of our government, in roles of Congress and Supreme Court and in other positions. It's very dangerous, very reckless. But with a lifetime appointment, that's what you got, basically. That's another question I talked to you about. Should there be term limits for the Supreme Court, or should they be forced to retire? That kind of a thing, you know? Well, listen, since 1869, basically, the U.S. Supreme Court has had nine justices. That's just become the rule of the land here. That's the way we've done it for more than 150 years here. But yet you got to remember something as well, that nine justices, that is not in the Constitution. The framers never pinned that down and said there must be nine, has to be nine. Nine is the answer. It's not in there. So that makes that the case that it's up to the interpretation of Congress now. Now, the problem is the Supreme Court is not supposed to be a political branch of the government. I mean, you've got the presidency is political. You got Congress that's political. The Supreme Court is judicial. That was supposed to be the judicial branch. And that was supposed to be the arm of the Constitution. And then we get into the argument of what's an originalist versus the Constitution being a living, breathing document. That's been an ongoing battle right along. Do you leave it up to the interpretation? That's really what we're talking about as well of these justices, or are the justices going back to really look at the Constitution and understand what is constitutional and what is not? In its simplest form, that is really the debate and the argument here. Now, by packing the Supreme Court, what that means is this: you have a political party in power via the Democrat Party or the Republican Party, and they decide to go on a shopping spree because they don't like the state of affairs or the way the court is packed at the moment. So then they say, well, it's like going out joyriding on a Friday afternoon and say, you know what? We're going to just go ahead and we're going to, you know, take another four or five justices. We're going to expand the court and we're going to appoint these political appointees. They become political judges at that point. And that would totally change and alter the court in ways that, well, would not be healthy for our republic, for sure, because it would just become then a political branch. It would no longer be a judicial branch in the way that it was intended. It would become just a political branch. You understand that? That's the danger. Now, that changes everything, because now you would have remember, the Supreme Court, they are the last go-to source. They are that's like the rulers of the land. They make the decision, and that becomes law of the land. When they make a ruling on a decision, that's it, done, over, finiti, over. That's their ruling, and you have to accept that, whether you like it or not, just like Roe versus Wade when that was passed, had to accept it. Even when some people didn't like it and thought it was done incorrectly, and that makes people uncomfortable. And then it becomes the law of the land because it's sort of baked into the cake as well. And some people even argue with the fact that Amy Coney Barrett may look at that in a different way than people think. And that's another thing. When the president, you know, nominates somebody for this position and appoints them to be that person after they get Supreme Court approval, you really don't know how they're going to vote, if they are a constitutionalist or an originalist to go back to the, I mean, they might surprise you. And we have proof of that as well. I mean, there's a history on that. They surprise you and they say, wow, that I didn't know they were going to vote that way. Well, that's a conservative. But you see, when you look at the Constitution as a whole, it's not necessarily all that liberal, and it's not necessarily all that conservative. You understand what I mean? It is what it is. There are things within our Constitution that may very well be liberal, and there are things in our Constitution that may be very well conservative. And I'm talking about conservative-minded or liberal-minded when it comes to policy. Does that make sense? And so that, again, leaves it up to the interpretation, the way I see it anyways, of how these justices interpret the Constitution, okay? Now, since the U.S. Constitution, again, does not define the size of the Supreme Court, Franklin Roosevelt, I mean, he came out in FDR and he pointed out that it was within the power of Congress to change it. And he did that back in 1937, actually. FDR announced a very controversial plan to expand the Supreme Court to as many as 15 judges. Now, this is the fact of history here. He wanted to do it. And he wanted to do it because they were kind of losing their grip and he wasn't able to get the New Deal out there. There were a lot of justices that were not happy. They were not comfortable. They were a bit hostile to the New Deal, if you will. And so he suggested, well, let's just pack the court. So listen, if it's a thought today, it's been thought of before. There's nothing new under the sun, they say, right? And that's clearly the case here as well, you know. And by the way, Franklin Roosevelt, you talk about a historical and consequential president who, of course, was the maker of the New Deal, but really has changed everything. And by the way, he was the only, the only American president in our history that has ever been elected four times to the presidency. And he will probably be the only one that ever will have that role unless they, pull away term limits and rebuke that from the presidency, which I don't see them doing that. So in which case he will have his mark in our country's history always with being the only president ever to be elected four times. And by the way, he died in office in 1945. So Franklin Roosevelt, he already knew the stakes in order to sweeten up his New Deal and push this all through. That was his concept. Let's pack the court and I'll get what I want. Now, current day, the danger of all that is with all these socialist policies of Green New Deals and all of these hard-lined policies over on the far left, you have to now begin to see the danger of packing the court. No matter what your political belief is, I mean, you can be a Democrat and still hate this, and you should. You can be a Republican, hate it, and you should. Everybody should hate this idea of packing the court. It shouldn't be a Republican or a Democrat conversation. Should it be an American conversation? I'm going to tell you that right up front, okay? It's a fact. And so, if the Democrats do away with this and they pack the court, then you change the Supreme Court forever. I mean, you change everything about our nation and you politicize the Supreme Court and you end up with three political branches of government. You no longer have the honorability of a judicial branch, and it changes the rules, people, because all these politicians have an agenda, and that's the way it goes, and they push that agenda all the time. Ironically, what goes around comes around, they say, and I just want to point one other thing out before we leave this and get to that second big issue, which is another big one, and that is this. Goes around, comes around. Well, the Democrats don't like the fact that President Trump is trying to initiate this Supreme Court justice and appoint Amy Coney Barrett. And they try to pull in the Merrick Garland, but it's not the same because they didn't have the Senate and the presidency. They only had the presidency. That was never passing. You have to understand that. And there have been Supreme Court justices appointed in election years, without a doubt. So it's an argument I don't want to spend a lot of time on, but I just say that to you because it's all fact. But it was the Democrats, as they're talking about now, this stack on the court here, right? It was the Democrats entirely who changed the rule of the 60-vote threshold. They're the ones who changed it. And they did that in 2013. You remember that. And they controlled the Senate back then. They changed the rules to appoint federal judges. the Republicans wouldn't be able to get Amy Coney Barrett in there right now. Would not have been successful with the first two either. That wouldn't have worked with Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, because you see what they did to Kavanaugh back then. So what goes around comes back around, probably. But of course, I say that. But then if you go that far out there with the Supreme Court, anything is possible, because if they do what they're talking about here, the levers of power may never swing back again if they get that extreme with their thinking. It's possible, people. I know that sounds to some like a fairy tale, but I don't think it is, really. Now, last couple of points here, and I think something that I want you to consider here is the politicizing of this Supreme Court. And if the Democrat Party, if they're willing to just totally dynamite, blow up this institution because it doesn't get to their means of a political, the ends of where they want to be, you can see what this does to DC politics and our capital. We're going to talk about total dysfunction at the highest level, people. And so this is a major issue. This should be bigger than the economy, healthcare, everything, because the decisions this court will be deciding will impact your economy and your health care and your COVID and every other big issue you're going to vote on. This one is major, because everything falls into this if you've stacked the Supreme Court and you politicized it. Does that make sense? Okay. And it is indeed a fact. And so there's a lot more about this, but let's move on because of time. And there's the one big issue I present to you today, my fellow Americans. So there is another big issue that will explain to you the danger in what Joe Biden is attempting to do here. But more so, it's the danger within the Democrat Party of what's happened in that political party. And we need to talk about where the Democrat Party is headed. The other big issue I'm going to share with you just after the pause here, and I would suggest to you this is a Trojan horse, and there's some things you need to know for sure. And I'll tell you all about the People's Charter just after this pause. More Voice of a Nation.
Listen to Malcolm, the Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, healthycell.com/sleep.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Joining you back here on The Voice of a Nation. Hey, I'm here every day, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. You hear me on America Out Loud Talk Radio, iHeartRadio. Get our apps on Apple, Android, Alexa. Or we have a great world-class media player as well. You hear us on a lot of different networks. But my show's 6 p.m., and there's an encore at 10 p.m. We have a great lineup of shows on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Check it out right at AmericaOutLoud.com. You'll see a lineup and all the awesome shows. On the weekend, again, catch us at Viewpoint. You'll see me at 10 to 12 every Sunday. 10 o'clock is Viewpoint this Sunday. Coming up on our three-year anniversary, by the way, for Viewpoint, right the first week of election. In 2020, here's a three-year anniversary for Viewpoint. I've been hosting that groundbreaking blockbuster show, and we do heavy lifting there every week. Hear that at 10 a.m. Eastern time, and at 11 a.m. is Viewpoint Presents with Michael Johns, and that's a really interesting hour as well. So you got two great hours of Viewpoint now, 10 to 12 and 6 to 8 later in the day, Eastern time. It all goes to podcast Sunday afternoon after 2. Catch it all right at AmericaOutLoud.com. Okay, let's talk about that second issue, okay? And this one I call for Biden the Trojan horse. This makes him a Trojan horse, but this is important. This is the second major issue you need to vote on, and you need to tell your friends and other people you know out there, your associates, about these two issues. I'm telling you, these will shape the election. If every American understands these issues right now for this election, I promise you this, you will definitely have, if this happens properly, definitely Donald Trump will be reelected and have a second term. And you will probably end up with a Senate will stay in the conservative hands. And you could even argue the House would tip back over. And as we get back to a more constitutionalist agenda here in our great nation. So the second issue, let's talk about the People's Charter. And I'll get back to this party. I don't know if you ever heard of the Working Families Party, but if not, I'll fill you in on that in a moment. But the People's Charter, very, very interesting piece of news you've been watching here in the past many days here, potentially. They're calling for free public health care, universal child care, creating millions of green jobs. That could mean about anything, right? Canceling student debt, and a 15 minimum wage minimum. And also they're talking about shifting money away from all the police departments. This is their agenda now, and towards investments in schools and communities. Wow, boy, that sounds like a real healthy agenda, doesn't it? For who? maybe if you're a Marxist nation, that would be a healthy agenda. So I think all the Democrats need to understand what's going on with this People's Charter. So your vote will count for something. If you vote for President Trump, I would absolutely implore you to do that, please. And if you like the man, great. And if you don't, just hold your nose and go in there and vote for him anyways, because it's the best way for you and your life moving forward. Okay. That's best advice I can give every American. Whether you're Democrat or Republican, I really don't give a rat's ass. If you're an American, you need to pay attention and you need to vote on these two issues. And I'm telling you, this is what's most important right now. This is what matters. Okay. So I just gave you that Marxist agenda. All right. Now, the Working Families Party, the national director, Maurice Mitchell, is who that is. Okay. He says, and I quote, now pay attention to what I tell you. This is important. We've always said that electing Joe Biden was a doorway, not a destination. Well, the People's Charter is that destination, a nation that cares for all of us, no matter what we look like, where we come from, or how much money is in our pockets. We're going to beat Donald Trump on November 3rd, and we're going to organize to make the vision outlined in the People's Charter a reality. Now, the People's Charter, it sounds very communistic, doesn't it? Sounds like a China program or a Russia-Moscow deal, and very well could be when I give you the whole program here. Now, he goes on to say, Biden is a doorway, not a destination. I mean, those are his words. So what that tells you is Biden is just the Trojan horse. Are you understanding what I am saying? If you had any question or guesses or thoughts before this, Joe Biden is a Trojan horse. That's all he is. Okay. And he says it right here. And I'm going to tell you who's involved in this here. There's a lot to this, but I want you to hear the words. He's just a doorway, not a destination. Meaning they're just using him as a means to an end. They really wanted Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren were far more, but they didn't want Joe Biden. But the reason Joe Biden and more so the Biden campaign, which is calling the shots here, not Biden himself, the reason they took Kamala Harris is because she was the best, next best thing to shut them the hell up, to get them in there to try to pull that crazy far left Marxist into what's left of the other Democrat people who you could talk to. So you see what they've tried. They've tried to glue that together with silly putty, basically, or that cheap glue, right? And it's not working. It's not working because of what's happening right now. And the left has pulled the levers of power down too quickly to admit all this in the last few days. And we need to drive this message out there, my fellow Americans. I'm telling you right now, Senator Kamala Harris, she was the lifeline that the left used for this whole Biden thing. That's why they've even said before she's come out and Biden has come out to say it's the Harris-Biden administration. Now, this makes a lot of sense right now. I want you to understand that, especially when Pelosi has gone off her rocker trying to institute some sort of a new adjunct to the 25th Amendment to say a president's crazy. President Trump comes out and says, well, the reason she's probably doing that is because she's going to use it against Biden. Now, of course, many people think she's trying to use it against Trump, but she really can't use it at Trump. There's no room for that, and there's no way she can maneuver because she's not going to have the support of the cabinet and the vice president that she would need to come anywhere close to a 25th Amendment. So then you think to yourself, what is Pelosi on? What is she taking? What is she doing in the ninth eve, in an eve of a major election with this 25th? I mean, that's kind of garbage, is that? Well, I think that's probably accurate. It's not based on Trump, probably. It probably is for Biden, which the president pointed out, and I have to believe he's correct, because she can't get to Trump, you see? And having said all of that, what is her motive otherwise? What's her motive? Well, her motive clearly is for Biden. So is that to get them into office, to use the Trojan horse and to get Biden the hell out of there? Because, I mean, how many people, with a show of hands here, please tell me, you think that he is capable of truly being president for the next 4 years of ruling this nation? Every one of you know he's not capable. The only reason you're voting for him is because you hate Donald Trump. Every Democrat knows that. Certainly every Marxist knows it, but Marxists don't care. That left wing of the, and I'm going to tell you who they are. They don't care. They're reckless. So they don't really, they have no care in the world about a Joe Biden presidency. It's a crapshoot, but they don't care. They got nothing else to lose. Does that make sense? Of course it does. Harris has come right out. She is one of the co-sponsors of the Green New Deal, but she stays up there on the debate and sits up there, you should say. And, I don't know what you're talking about. Green New who? And, so obviously Kamala Harris was not their first. It was not the first choice, but the Biden campaign, if you will, had no choice. And they thought Harris could be the Band-Aid, more or less, to shut the far left up, because she's really a wackadoodle. Kamala Harris, I'm speaking about, she is a wackadoodle, right? And they know that. Everybody knows it. So she was sort of that, you know, person put in there as the lifeline, I guess you call it, or a Band-Aid, whatever you want to call it, okay? Either way. Now, you've seen her full, a lot of her colors come out when you talked about the fracking and all of that. You wouldn't, she's saying, I wouldn't ban fracking, but yet she's on record of saying she will ban fracking. And of course, AOC jumped right on Twitter and said, fracking is bad, actually. So that's a whole argument about energy in our country. You know, it's a conversation we've had and we can continue to have. But it tells you what their grand plans are for energy here in our nation. So you can't sit behind that and lie to the American people. And see, that's another thing you got to remember, people. That's what's so refreshing about Trump is he tells you what avenue to get off. He tells you what he's going to do and he does it. You like it, you don't. But he's not a phony. He's not a phony. He's not a politician. A phony politician is all these other cats are. You can say whatever you want. You don't like his color Wheaties or whatever. I mean, whatever. Okay. You know, you can pick any poison you want here, but you see what I'm saying? And if you're basing your vote on principle, and we can get more Americans to understand that, then this thing is a slam dunk. It's over. We just need these two issues. We don't need to, because these two issues are going to control everything. It's going to control your economy. It's going to control your health care. It's going to control your education. It's going to control COVID. It's going to control everything. Everything goes through these two issues. I'm telling you, I promise you. And so they have put together this People's Charter. And what they're doing is they're forcing the hand of Biden. They've come right out and said, we're going to force the hand of Biden to make him. I mean, this is where this struggle in the Democrat Party is that I've been talking to you about. The far left of the party who has pushed their issues inward. This is what I've been discussing right along. And now we're seeing that happen within this group here in developing this new plan of the People's Charter. So you see what's happening here. They've got the Green New Deal. And it's an interesting point I want to make on that as well. The cost of this Green New Deal is crazy stuff here. We're talking this deal now, and this is, again, spearheaded by AOC, who is completely out to lunch, and also Senator Ed Markey out of Massachusetts, two Democrats. And again, the Democrat label, it's hard to, when you say Democrat as a congressman or something, or a senator in this case here as well, it's hard because it's not the typical Democrat that there's a lot of those people now have been infiltrated in the group and they become part of that whole Marxist socialist environment. And this is where that big struggle is in the party, you see, that we've been talking about. But now it's in the full daylight here where they're pushing for this agenda here. And I mean, they got active meetings going on. But this, for instance, this particular Green New Deal here, it's estimated by the think tank, American Action Forum is the one here. The cost of this, they reported $93 trillion in the first 10 years to implement what they're speaking about here with the Green New Deal. Okay. Now, that's equivalent to $65,000 per American household we're speaking about. I mean, these numbers are crazy stuff here. And the estimated deal would cost $6.6 trillion per year, or three times the amount of tax revenue the federal government collects every year. Well, what? Let's translate that. What does that mean? That means it's undoable, and it's in the lunacy stage. It's not fantasy land. It's lunacy land. It's not even remotely possible. Whatever they think they're going to save, whether it's saving the whales or saving the trees or saving anything, there'll be nobody left here for any purpose. These people are, this is what you're dealing with here. They are whacked out. Yes, I mean, this is it. So these are the kinds of things when I say Trojan horse that I'm speaking about, you see, these Trojan horse policies. And then you see why I bring up the fact if Pelosi comes out with this whole, why is she bringing this 25th Amendment out while she's still in power right now? Because she may not be in power in a few months. Hopefully not, right? Hopefully her time is up, let's hope. But you see, why is she doing that now? Well, she's trying to change the rules, obviously. And it can't be to impact Trump, even though she's using that to go after him in whatever capacity. They have a horrible relationship. I don't think I've ever seen a relationship as bad in political circles as you see with the Speaker of the House and the president. It's really horrible. I mean, they legitimately hate each other. And that's been building for some years now. You know, she's, again, just to remind you, she tore up the whole State of the Union speech in front of America there on camera. And in front of the entire, right there at the Capitol. I mean, it's pretty remarkable how low that relationship has sunk to. And, you know, there is no doing what's best for the American people there. It's just rip the damn thing up and, you know, piss all over the Constitution, I guess. Pretty sad state. But you just have to understand the Trojan horse that Joe Biden is. I don't need to make it personal. We don't need to start throwing mud. I don't need to talk about what he is, he isn't, or what he did in all his life, or how great he was or wasn't. It doesn't even matter, people. It matters that he is at the end of his life. It matters that he's not capable of being president. Everybody knows it. Everybody, even the people who support him know it. He is a Trojan horse. So the middle of the aisle and the Democrats who care about their country are going to have to pull the lever for Donald Trump. There is no question about it. You have to, or you're going to sink your country based on the two big issues I've just given you, because this does not have any lifeblood and cannot stand. It will not work in our nation. This People's Charter is a Marxist move. And they say right in here, they're quoted as saying they're going after Biden and they're going to put pressure on him. He was only the doorway. He's not the destination, they said. Does that make sense? Well, that tells you what their grand plans are, doesn't it now? And that's the problem, my fellow Americans, we have. And so there are the two issues right there. The People's Charter, the Marxist takeover of the Democrat Party, and what that struggle that's happening in there. And the fact that they're all lying. That's right there. And the fact that they're lying about packing the court. You see? I mean, that's the other big thing they're lying about. So you look at those two issues, none of the other issues matter. I think the conservative movement needs to get behind those two issues. The American movement needs to get behind those two issues. That's what everybody needs to talk about right there, because that should decide every vote more than anything else, more than the healthcare, the environment, the economy, education. Not everything else pales when you're talking about these two issues, people. So we are at the moment of our nation. It is not the time for playing games. It is the time for truth, and the truth must prevail. And it is our job and your job out there to notify all the people of these two major issues. They need to hear this program we just did today. I'm going to run this a couple of times on talk radio because this is so paramount. This conversation gets out there. Please require this to be required listening for every American to hear this message, please. Thank you, my fellow Americans, for being on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get loud.